The hour that packs a punch. It's Reese on the radio on WTIC News Talk 1080.
I completely don't go anywhere, Roseanne. I just completely screwed up Hollywood News because I forgot the movie that we watched. Was it that horrible that you don't even remember it either? No, we didn't watch Wesley Snipes.
The other black guy.
The other black guy? Who was the other black guy?
Glasses,
No, that one I've already talked about. We just watched the movie this weekend that we watched all the way to the end. And we were completely like, it wasn't horrible, but it was okay. We were just kind of like laughing at it. Why am I forgetting it?
It was that bad.
Oh, it must have been that bad. Now I have to look up and see what movie it was. And I completely...
It was so horrible, we forgot it.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. But I wanted to talk about it. I totally forgot the name of it. I cannot remember it. That's how bad Hollywood films are getting right now. Although the Emmys was last night, and what's his name? Nick Bergantzi, is that his name? Yeah, he was actually funny. And I'm glad his opening monologue was kind of short. But he did one of the coolest and cruelest things in the world, and that was... He put up a meter for the people who were going to be receiving awards, and they only had 45 seconds to give their speech. And he starts off the monologue by saying, I'm going to give the Boys and Girls Club $100,000. And if your speech is longer than 45 seconds, money is going to start ticking off the $100,000. But they were like, but if you do it shorter than the 45 seconds, the amount would go up. And there's a one scene that's online. I just looked it up. I'm trying to find the actual footage of it. But apparently some guy won some award for a technical thing, and he went on and on and on. And during the broadcast, they put the Boys and Girls Club meter on there and watch the thousands of dollars tick down. And people were in the audience groaning about it because he was kind of shaming the guy. That was actually funny. Nick Bergantzi is actually a pretty good comedian. And, you know, he's not political in any way, but I think he's hilarious. And he's a very clean comedian. We watched a couple of things by him, Roseanne, right? Nick Bergantzi. We watched a couple of events. Yeah, I think he's funny. He's very clean and very wholesome. Which is, you know, hard to do with everybody else. The raunchy stuff. Let's get a check of weather and traffic. Bob Larson's got weather, and Mark Christopher is in a BPS traffic center. Are you familiar with that guy, Mark? Nate Bergantzi. I'm saying Nick. It's Nate. Are you familiar with him at all? It's not ringing a bell. Is he not? There you go. Hey, Mark.
It's Reese on the radio on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
I knew it was. I don't know why I forgot. It talks about how bad it was. Pete Davidson and Eddie Murphy did a movie together called The Pickup on Netflix. That was the movie we watched. Is it not on Netflix? Okay, it may have been on Apple TV or one of those things, it was on Prime. It was on Amazon Prime. We watched that the other night. Why did we forget that fast? We watched the whole thing and completely. Who isn't the star of the movie? Who's the star of the movie? Eddie Murphy and Pete Davidson? They were the stars of the film. It was a buddy film.
No, it wasn't.
What was it then? Isn't Kiki not the pickup? Yeah, I mean, I know that she's one of the stars of the movie, but we don't care. It's Kiki Palmer, which I thought was, there were a couple of, funny lines that sort of referenced their other films. Like there's one part where they're driving in the truck and Pete Davidson plays the Neutron Dance by the Pointer Sisters and Eddie looks at him. Of course, that's from Beverly Hills Cop. And then there's another scene where Kiki Palmer is trying to get away and she's stopped by this 18 wheeler and on the side of the 18 wheeler, the word nope. From the sci-fi film that she was in.
Then they made a 9/11 reference at Pete Davidson.
Oh, then they made a 9/11 reference towards Pete Davidson, which for some odd reason is a going joke, which I'm like not comfortable with. I'm like, dude, you guys are way too far with that. They do it all the time. Anyway, let me do this. I have to give a congratulations, today to our winner, who is Anna S. from Glastonbury. She is our first winner of our Greg Gutfeld Live 25 show featuring Greg Gutfeld and special guest Tom Shalhoub. which is on Sunday, September 21st at 6 p.m. at the Premier Theater at Foxwoods Resort. If you would like to purchase tickets, go to foxwoods.com. And we'll be giving them away every day this week. So with your opportunity coming, and by the way, I am not giving it away the same time every day. Okay? So if you're trying to, my wife is already going, well, what about it? It's on the 21st. Today is the 15th. You want to go all the way to Foxwoods in the next couple of days? You do not know how to save money, woman. You don't. You just don't. Let me get to the phones. I got work to do. Let's go to Sean in Meriden. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Just a comment on, because I heard your little diatribe about Murphy. And about a week ago, he did the same thing on a Sunday show in which he basically was calling to arms anybody who wants to take up his mantle and fight on their behalf.
Yes.
And I'm like, dude, you are a senator. Get your head out of your behind and like grow up. You lost. And now you're indirectly saying, as a social worker in the private sector, I know how to say something without saying something.
Yeah.
And what is, and that's what they're doing. And they are responsible. Tutti and Frutti.
Yeah, again, this is the thing where, look, this obsessive thing. I read the numbers and the stats. 90% of the stuff he posts is about Donald Trump. This is very, scary, if not concerning. And people should talk to him about it. It's like, you have other things that you can be discussing. You know that there are other problems in Connecticut that you can be addressing, be it housing, be it the homeless, be it anything for that matter, and you're never addressing them. You're doing world tours obsessing about Donald Trump and a threat to democracy, and it looks problem. It looks like a problem for you. And I think that he should just calm down, take a beat, and talk to somebody. But it seems very interesting.
But if the left doesn't say, and the left hasn't said this, not one of them has said anything about decorum and about, get out of this war mentality with the other half who voted for President Trump.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
They have never left that. Matter of fact, they've doubled down on that and got more aggressive with it in that he's a threat. How is he a threat to democracy when basically he's looking out for the American people and saying American people should have more money to keep in their pockets and have more choices and have more freedoms? If that's a threat to democracy, then the less definition of democracy is communism.
Yeah.
And that's what they're embracing.
I think that's what.
And that lifestyle.
I think it's a fair argument. Thank you, boss.
Well, have a great day. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk to somebody I haven't talked to in a while, all the way in Niagara Falls. Hello, Polly.
Oh, my. You forgot about Niagara Falls.
Forget about them. I haven't been back up there at WBEN for a while, probably because, I got the gig here. But the minute that I do, I got to call my good friend Bella Villa. I just saw him on Jesse Waters last week. I got to give him a holler.
Listen, regardless of the who, the how, the why, this assassination of this major name, which I got to admit, didn't even know who he was.
Really?
I mean, I know his name. Did not know anything about him until this happened. What is the divide and conquer distraction? What I see is a pattern. It's pattern of JFK. He was not a JFK. He was an RFK.
Right.
But he was. He was. He was and he wasn't. What happened after JFK? We had, conspiracy theorists and
sure.
Vietnam. What happened after 9/11? We had the NDAA and the CIA's Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. Mm-hmm. I see, to me, a turmoil growing, brewing over all this with both sides. The right are they're fed up. We had the COVID and all that
sure.
other stuff. And I see this back and forth And yet, okay, here's my stance. I am a, well, I'm not, okay, I would consider myself a libertarian now.
No, I always thought that about you, Polly.
Libertarianism. But I see this growing divide with the right against the left, and where they're really, really angry, and they're like, okay, really, let's really finally do something. And they get the left, who are always willing to do anything because they're bought and paid for. And I shouldn't say that about the left. They're not all, no.
Some of them are very influenced by their politics, and they are sort of guided by the principle that means that they are right and beyond reproach. And I think that's the most scathing thing I could say about people on the left. Is that, and again, this is a byproduct of your usual casual conversation with them, Polly. I would say, and again, people's like, you know, I'm not admonishing them. Usually on the left, it is a dyed-in-the-wool approach to politics, the way in which they see it. How do we know that? Because when you ask them, come on my program, come on any other conservatives' programs, there is a hesitance, right? There's a degree of like, I'm not going to go in there because I would never. But my question is, if you don't want the divide, if you want a common sense back and forth between the two, you would run at that invitation to have a conversation to win hearts and minds. But there's a reason why you don't. Because in order for you to get your political ends, it's admonish people who don't agree with you instead of influence. And again, you don't need any other litmus test than their own. And that is what happens when someone says, I don't think I want to be Democrat anymore because I don't stand for what you believe in. They will immediately attack you for your gender, your race, or whatever. And instead of saying, what can we do to get you back, they would sooner push you further away. So.
Okay, but here's another point. Okay, the left, we can't put them all, like, we can't lump all groups into one group. Can't, like, lump all white, black, Indian, whatever, into one group. Same way has been used against the nations for centuries, is a perfect 50-50. North, south, east, west, it's usually north, south. But black, white, well, Kate, that doesn't quite work in America.
I don't think it'll work in the way in which the world, the country, I should say, not even the world, the country works today, but that's just another part. But thank you, Polly. I got to move on real quick.
All right.
We're almost coming to the end of it. Thank you as always. The Civil War thing, in order to do that, and I've talked about this very early. I remember even having this conversation with Rudy in Florida. Was like, when people talk about the Civil War, what are we talking about? Neighbor versus neighbor? It's different. We actually had a group secede from the Union, create an army, and go to war. It did not happen overnight. You know, the Confederate established itself as an army, as a country, if you will, and went against its brothers in the North. Right? They had a president. They had an ideal. They had an army. They had a faction. That's how that worked. We live in a country where red, white, left, right, up, down, sideways, live amongst one another. In order for that to happen, you really have to, like, states have to say, nope, no longer a part of the United States. A vote has to happen. We're saying, nope, we're not a part of the United States anymore. To secede. And until that happens, it's just a bunch of people arguing. Fighting with each other, at best, over a parking spot. The Civil War thing is a bit far-fetched. Just a bit. I know that it's said for dramatics and it's said out of concern. I don't want to dismiss anybody's concern. I get it. But it takes a lot more. Civil wars don't just happen in a snap. Speaking of which, I wanted to talk about this before I get out of here, and I'll get back to your phone calls, I promise. But I said that I was going to go after some people on the right, and I have to on one, with one commentator, and that's Glenn Beck. And Blaze Media, nothing against them. I don't even have anything against Glenn Beck. But this particular commentary that he gave was really troubling to me, and it bothered me in a sense that I feel if it gains traction, it will sully Charlie Kirk's name. Charlie Kirk's movement exists. It doesn't need the creation of something else. It doesn't need any molding. It doesn't need any polishing. It is. Charlie is who he is. And because Charlie Kirk happened organically, his legacy should do the same, in my opinion. I'm not omnipotent here. I don't get to say it. I'm just giving my opinion why I have a problem. Glenn Beck said that we need to call Charlie Kirk appropriately a civil rights leader. No, we do not. Don't even start that one. Charlie Kirk was never a civil rights leader. Ever. He was just having conversations with people who opposed him. If there was anything he was a conversationalist and a thinker and a Christian. But he doesn't need a moniker. Civil rights are associated with Jesse Jackson, Benjamin Crum, Al Sharpton. Please do not sully that man's name. For the love of goodness, please don't. That civil rights thing, that's done. It's been done, and it's been washed up and useless for a long time. It doesn't even have the gravitas it used to. Just let it happen organically. Charlie Kirk is. That's enough. We're not trying to make him Jesus Christ. We're not trying to make him the second coming. He's just Charlie Kirk. And trust me when I tell you, if you've been paying attention, that's enough. It is. It's enough. For all of us. So, we'll get into that. I hear Donald Trump's going into Memphis. I'd have picked another city, but I love Memphis. It's one of my favorite places. You know, sans the violence. Memphis is still one of my favorite places to visit. I've talked about that place a lot. I remember I would never stop talking about it, especially my first experience going to the Lorraine Motel and how that affected me in such a profound way, and meeting the woman who still sits outside and protests her removal from that hotel. I think I still have her flyer around here. I talked about her when I was there not too long ago. I've had three trips to the Lorraine Motel in my life. I tell everybody, if you got to get a chance, get there immediately. All right, we'll be back. More news, more views. Let's get the weather and traffic. Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS Traffic Center. How you doing, big guy?
The Odyssey app lets you jump back to the moments you missed from WTIC News Talk 1080. Download the free Odyssey app, search WTIC News Talk 1080, and tap earlier today to get started.
Yeah, make sure you download that Odyssey app as soon as possible. Just go to WTIC.com or just go to Odyssey.com in order to do that as well. It's what had happened was, and the thing that I said earlier today, and I'm going to post it, that whole monologue about Chris Murphy. But before I do that, I want to play you this. And again, this is why I suggested a healthcare professional be met by Chris Murphy. It was last week. Chris Murphy was talking about we are at war. And now, all of a sudden, he has a change of tune. These are his exact words from last week, what, a day before Charlie Kirk's murdered? And now today, saying that he didn't say the other thing. Listen.
We're in a war right now to save this country, and so you have to be willing to do whatever is necessary in order to save the country.
We look today at the left or the right as the enemy, and it's worth us stepping back and understanding how we reclaim a sense of ourself.
Now, again, right? Sounds like a mea culpa, right? It's like, we are at war. And there's like, oh, you know, we need to stop the division. But again, Chris Murphy, like a crackhead, he needs help. Next line.
That maybe is not so rooted in politics, which is inherently oppositional. There has been a permissiveness about political violence, and I do think the President of the United States has to answer for the way in which he's created that culture of permissiveness.
He just can't. The fact that his party would not pull him aside and go, Chris, stop. Okay? That guy, that recent radio guy, he's got a good point, man. I don't like him either. Okay. But, you know, seriously, 90% of people online are calling you very, very unkind things. Oh yeah. We have that stat too. It's right here. We have it. Chris Murphy overall view is an abomination. It's like really, really bad. 90% of the people who have viewed his online stuff is bad. Negative or critical. 90% heavy focus on hypocrisy and blame for violence. Yeah. Only 15% support him and his online presence. 5% neutral. Five. Did I get that? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. 10%. Yeah. I don't know how he got 5%. None of that matches. It's like 110%. Nonetheless, it ain't good. Let's get another check of weather and traffic. Mark Christmas in VPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
What's up, everybody? You know who it is.
You know who it is.
You know who it is.
It's Reese on the Radio. Frederick Douglass of the 21st century.
It's WTIC News Talk 1080.
Oh, Jim Himes is getting in on it. Come on, bro. Come on. Democrat Rep Himes plays victims and attacks Republicans for seizing on Charlie Kirk's murder. Seizing on it. It's falling short. It just falls short. It's got no facts, no basis in reality. This is exactly what happens when you know you're losing and it affects you in a negative way. You can't come back from it. You'll try. You'll think that the dust is settled. You'll wait until that happens and you'll try to ratchet it up again. But that's donezo, as we used to say. It is. It just is. Ridiculous at best. To try to pin it on. You can do that on MSNBC. You can do that on CNN. They've got to salvage their viewership. They've got to salvage their reputation in some way. They all need to pretend right now like everything that happened didn't happen into the lead up. They have to pretend, yo, you didn't see any of that. Even though it's on video, even though we've been chronicling this stuff, I've got tons of it. I had to buy a what do you call it? One of those storage things? A complete terabyte for all of the video clips that I can go to and just put in a word. Tons of them pop up. Years of doing my podcast since 2012 of the same old rhetoric. I could literally press play and it would fill up the 4 hours commercial free. They all know that this is, and again, and the constant trying to fix it post murder, trying to say, no, it wasn't associated with us. We didn't do it. We had nothing to do with it, is nonsense. Let's go one step further. I guess they'll tell us that this wasn't real either, that none of this happened on their watch. I remember it well.
Someone threw a Molotov cocktail at a Tesla service center. At least 5 Teslas blew up. When you pull out a chainsaw to celebrate firing thousands of people, they get mad. It's just that, you know.
Let's send these techno-fascist
oligarchs, and old-fashioned Nazis, a message loud and clear.
The vandalism really shows the outright anger and rage that people are feeling about what Elon Musk is doing.
We should all be protesting in the streets about this and be incredibly angry.
It has taken the American people to go protest at Tesla to get the president's attention.
Try to dismantle the reputation of Tesla in hopes of hitting Elon Musk where it hurts.
He's incompetent. He's a thief. He's a Nazi.
Musk is a pathological liar. He's a criminal. He's a sociopath and a ghoul. He's literally killing people, but he should really enjoy taking this, this guy down.
That was John Cusack. I can't even watch his movies anymore. Even the old ones, even the really good ones, I can't do it.
All I want to see happen on my birthday is for Elon to be taken down.
If you drive a Tesla, please sell it. And if you own stock in Tesla, please dump it.
I've never wanted to buy a Tesla because I prefer to buy cars made by car companies, not computer companies.
I added Tesla to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping.
Tesla's tanking right now, and I'm okay with that.
Tesla is a meme stock. It is one of the most wildly overinflated stocks.
Tesla stock is way down. Please don't vandalize. Don't ever vandalize Tesla vehicles. And so
they're taking to the streets or the parking lots.
Tonight, the FBI and ATF now investigating multiple cases of possible arson.
Oh, you guys like petty acts of domestic terrorism.
Please spare us. You're going to act like none of that happened. That's what, again, and you don't have, the worst part is that you don't own the media scape anymore. You don't. Videos like this are flooding online, social media. The kids are seeing it. You remember that nonsense they used to tell us all the time, you know? I'm concerned about Donald Trump and our children hearing the way that he talks. Yeah, back at you. Back at you. We're listening to the way that you talk, what you applaud, what you celebrate, what you post online. Yeah, it's all there. It's interesting to watch on the other side, huh? Kurt is in Glastonbury. Hello, Kurt.
Hello, Mr. Hopkins. I listen in to, so I can hear from Mark from West Hartford, and you happen to get in the way.
My apologies.
I've been thinking all weekend about something you said last Friday, I believe, and then you said it again today.
Mm-hmm.
And pushback might be too strong of a word, but I did want to comment on it. I'm raised a Roman Catholic, baptized, First Communion, and everything in that line.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that God killed Charlie Kirk.
I don't think I said that. I said the word I said the assassin killed him.
I stand corrected, but let me then rephrase my concern. I don't think God took. He's in his arms. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was an act of God. It was an act of Satan. And mm-hmm. what you're seeing now, in my opinion, is God's work. Those
gotcha.
Guys that tried to save them, that was God's work.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are rallying, we're going to have a vigil on the 21st here in Glastonbury. I think all of that is God's work.
Mm. Okay. But I don't want to say, well, you said pushback. I don't feel that your commentary was any pushback. If it's okay, do you mind if I call it a difference of opinion?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
That's why I said I thought pushback might be too strong, but I didn't know how else to phrase it.
I don't take that. When I say certain things, and that's a very important thing that I need to say, I have never once believed that my point of view can never be challenged on that. And I love the fact that you called in and that was important enough to you to make a statement about, as sort of a difference of opinion, because I think that's fair. I see what you're saying. Like, we need to focus on this in the sense of the actions of the shooter who took his life was the act of Satan. Fair. Absolutely fair argument.
Yep.
I can't dispute it. And I talk, not only do I feel it, I can agree with it. But let me explain what I mean by took. Right? Because you have a lot of people who suggest, And I used to do this, and I kind of take a childlike wonder to it. I remember one of my kids saying that if God exists, why does he let kids starve? You know, or why does he? Because it's sort of that perspective is that even though there is a Satan, they still see God as the omnipotent one, right? They still see, they sort of see Satan in a sense, a secondary role, right? He's a guy who's mischievous and creates evil in the world, but God, he's so powerful, why doesn't he prevent it? And I sort of, as of late, in my sobriety and in a lot of other things in my spirituality, when I look at the word of God, when I say that term, took Charlie Kirk, I say that it is something that you and I cannot understand, that in all of this is sort of in God's design, that even in peril, even in bad outcomes, that in God's design, it is for something greater that you nor I can understand, because we are of the flesh and we see things based upon our experiences and how we're raised and see things as a black and white, where God sees it in a completely different way because in essence, it is his plan. So when I say God took him, it's an understanding in my view, and maybe I should articulate it better, is that God is the arbiter of this whole thing. So that's kind of the way I was phrasing it.
Yeah, when my mother died of cancer when I was 26 years old, and I went to church and I said to the pastor, is it okay to be mad at God? And he said, yeah, of course it is. And then I read this book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. It was by a reverend, Harold Kushner, I believe his name was. Okay. And his son died of what, ageism disease. He aged really quickly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's a very good book for an understanding of how God really works, that while God may not have been able to save his boy, it's the things that happen afterwards, the nurses and the people, the therapy. My neighborhood gave us meals and all kinds of support when my mother was sick. So that, to me, that's God's work.
Gotcha. Do you think God is to a degree absent at the moment of tragedy?
Wow, that's a heavy question for me.
I know. Okay. No, that's, and you have to understand that that's where my, in this conversation, that's the understanding of where I am in the death of Charlie Kirk or the death of anyone, is that I always believe that God is present in those moments. Cause again, we can look, you answered my question before I could even ask it. When you said, you asked the pastor, could you be angry at God for taking your mom?
Yeah.
Because you're saying that in that very simple way, you're kind of saying that God should have intervened because you see him as always present. Like that was something he could have controlled. But I look at it in a broader scope that says that even when we are thinking something bad is happening to us, God is doing something for us. That in a way, Charlie Kirk's death, as you said, after the fact when your mom passed, or even after Charlie Kirk dies, that God is working thereafter. But in order to accept that, we must then say that God was not present at the moment that bullet struck. And I don't believe that. I believe God was always present and is present at everything that happens in our lives, good and bad.
Yes, I agree with you. And also that I have seen that video. And there's just so much the human body can take.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how else to describe it. An assault like that.
Yeah.
Was very vicious.
I wanted to believe, Kurt, that he was going to make it.
Oh, I did too. I mean, it's, you know, and the other thing I'll say about him is, I think you said earlier today you didn't follow him, but you were aware of him.
Yeah.
I would see these clips on Instagram, so I knew who he was. But I did not realize the impact he had on the world.
Yeah.
There are people that are going to church because of him. There are people that are reading the Bible because of him. And now I'm getting emotional.
Yeah. No, and you know what? It's appropriate. Let me tell you why. Because I think what you just illustrated right here, Kurt, is – you started by saying you were like me. You didn't really know much about him, but you had seen him around. And his passing has had an indelible effect on you. And it's almost like his passing was greater than his existence, right?
Yes, I just told my chiropractor that a half hour ago.
Yeah.
His impact in death is larger than it will have been in life.
Yes, exactly.
As much as he was very smart. I have a college education, but this guy could have put me under the ringer with his recall.
Who was
his recall?
Who was at his memorial yesterday, I think it was. I want to say it was Tulsi Gabbard or someone else, but one of the women who spoke from the cabinet said about Charlie Kirk that Charlie Kirk didn't need college. College needed Charlie Kirk.
Yep.
And that is exactly who he was and the impact that he has. And even as you get emotional about it, and I think we all have gotten a little emotional about it, some parts of it as we feel, like as my brother said, that we were all robbed of something, that something was taken away from us. Because having him here gave us an opportunity to think and to speak and to challenge ourselves. And him not being here almost feels like something was taken away that we can't get back. But I don't believe that. I think we got more out of Charlie in his passing than we did while he was alive.
Yeah, it's sad, but I happen to agree with that. His impact is going to be lasting there for a long time.
Indeed.
And
thank you, Kurt.
Even though...
Oh, well, yeah, last thing. Go ahead. Say the last thing. I'm sorry.
Well, two last things. It'll, even though there's downside to social media, he'll be present on it for a number of years.
Oh, yeah.
The last thing I want to say is don't move to Farmington. Come to Glastonbury.
We'll look into it. I promise we'll look into it now that you mentioned it.
I'll be happy to show you around. It's a great community. A lot of history. We're on the banks of the Connecticut River. You will not be disappointed.
You know what? That's an invitation enough. Thank you, Kurt. I appreciate your time.
You bet. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. All right, folks. That's our show for today. As I always say, radio is free. So we thank you for paying attention. Remember to keep JC in your hearts and in your minds. Sean Patrick, we love you and we miss you. Remember that panic is not planning. Just plan your work and work your plan. Me, I'm Reese in the Radio. You have a good night. Pleasure tomorrow. We'll see you back here next time. Mark Christopher. He's in the BPS Traffic Center. We will see you guys manana. Good night, Mark.